The call to post means it's time for Off to the Races on the Racing Biz Radio Network. We're talking thoroughbred racing and breeding from Virginia, around the Mid-Atlantic, and across the country. Off to the Races is powered by the Racing Biz, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Find them at www.theracingbiz.com. Now here's your host with Off to the Races on the Racing Biz Radio Network.
Welcome, everybody. Frank Vespi here, Off to the Races, doing it podcast style a couple days before the 2019 Kentucky Derby. Wanted to bring in a couple experts to talk with us here on Off to the Races about betting the Derby, about betting strategies, and kind of looking in kind of an overview of the 2019 Run for the Roses. Going to be joined here by Gary Quill, a name that many of you are familiar with, has been writing the eponymous GQ approach on the racingbiz.com for quite a while and a number of other handicapping projects. And also Jonathan Stetton, Jonathan of pastthewire.com. Check them out for lots of Derby-related stuff as well. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, appreciate the chance to carry our Twitter conversation over into an actual conversation. Gary, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate you doing this.
It's my pleasure. The ravenous internet wanted content, so we're here to try to provide some. Jonathan, let's start with you a little bit, because you and I were sort of going back and forth on Twitter a little bit. Talk a little bit about your, as you approach the Derby, how are you kind of looking at this kind of as an overview? What's your sort of approach to how you're gonna handicap and wager this race?
Well, what I'm going to try and do, you know, contrary to I think the majority of opinions out there this year, I am not, you know, seeing the race as wide open as a lot of people are. I only see, the possibility of a couple of horses running late at the end, maybe the last eighth of a mile, getting that mile and a quarter. So what I'm going to try and do is figure out who those, you know, two, three, maybe even one horse is. And really narrow my bet. I'm going to try and play a pick four and a pick five alive to maybe just one or two horses in the Derby. And if I'm right, you know, hopefully get to that leg. And if I'm right, get paid. And if I'm not, you know, live to fight another day. But I'm not going to spread this year. I'm going to narrow down the Derby and just try and zero in on, you know, the one or two horses I think are going to be, you know, running at the end.
Gary, do you see it the same way?
It's funny because it seems as if Jonathan and I have the same philosophy in our handicapping, where I'm a horizontal better, doubles, pick threes, pick fours, whatever. And the reason why I'm that way is because my handicapping style is who I think can win the race. Every day in racing, there are a lot of 6-to-5 choices that go off who haven't won a race in a while, but because everybody thinks it's the best horse in the race, they make it 6-to-5, even though the horse has a hard time getting to the wire first. So I'm kind of in the same group as Jonathan. I like to find who I believe can win. And believe me, there's a lot of horses in this race who have a shot to get in the money or run well, but probably not get to the wire first. So it'll be interesting throughout this conversation how Jonathan and I thought might be, you know, have a different philosophy, but I know it seems like that we're the horizontal bettors, but I know you, Frank, you're a trifecta, superfecta type of better. So how would you view betting the Derby?
Well, actually, I'm not a trifecta, superfecta better. I almost never bet tries or supers, to be honest. I prefer horizontal wagers as well, but I'm more of a chase my own tail, trying to find a preposterous long shot better, which can be a tricky way to be at times. But Gary, do you also see it? I mean, Jonathan said he sees it coming down to just a couple of horses here. Do you see it that way? Will you only be using a small number of horses in your picks?
Well, truthfully, 24 hours ago, I thought it was wide open. I saw the race as probably the toughest one to narrow down if you were going to play, you know, verticals, you know, exactas, tries, supers. But as a result of the post position draw, I don't think I'm alone based on what I've seen on social media since that everything points to one horse, and to me that one horse is the morning line favorite, Omaha Beach, which I haven't picked the favorite in the Derby since probably the Bush 41 administration. So it's really tough on me to say that I like the morning line favorite, but the post that he got based on the post of the other horses, I just think it's his race to lose.
Jonathan, you said you know you're going to be looking for a horse that's running late, and obviously that is helpful going a mile and a quarter. But I guess I'm wondering, does your saying that imply that you think there's going to be a fast pace and you're really looking for a closer here?
You know, it's interesting you say that, and I can explain to you how I see the race. You know, I think that Maximum Security is going to go for the lead. I think Luis Saez is aggressive. I don't think he's going to wait. I don't think he's going to try and sit off anybody. I think he's going to go. And I think that a lot of how the race unfolds is going to depend on what the other riders do. Are they going to be patient and say, hey, maybe he's cheap, maybe he's not good enough, you know, maybe he'll come back to us and not go after him? If that happens, I always worried about a horse, you know, on the lead by himself. But I don't think that's going to happen. I do think that they will go after him. I think Mike Smith on Omaha Beach is not going to want to let him get away. Mike likes to kind of send in these races as well. So, you know, taking those rider tendencies into account, I don't know how fast they're going to go, but I do think that it's going to get a little bit contested at some point, maybe after a half, or maybe when they go three quarters, you know, you'll have a couple of early moves there. And I think that's all it's really going to take to set it up from somebody coming off the pace. Now, granted, I like speed, and I know speed's always dangerous. I just think the way I'm kind of picturing the race unfold, I think there's going to be enough, you know, if not fast of a pace, enough little battles and horses going at each other over that, you know, half mile, three quarters, maybe even into the mile, to kind of set it up for somebody, you know, coming late to pick up those pieces.
Gary, what do you think? Is that approximately how you see this?
Yeah, along the line of the speed, the biggest question to me is the horses in the first four gate, or I'm sorry, the first seven gates, which goes from Waterwheel at the rail all the way out to Maximum Security in the seven. I mean, you got Vicoma in the six, Improbable, you know, I like him probably better than Omaha Beach, but I'm concerned about those seven slots coming out, getting to the wire the first time. If anybody can tell me how that's going to shake out from those seven horses and who's going to survive and get to the lead along the rail, then I'm going to want them to pick my stocks for my 401k, because that's the most unpredictable part of the race for those seven horses. And that's why, even though I think Improbable is going to be the strong horse coming in, he could just find himself in a world of trouble behind those horses. Definitely War Will has the early speed, and if he don't get a quick out of the gate, he's basically screwed. Tax, he's not slow from the gate, so those two are going to be fighting. By My Standards is in that Improbable, you know, tactical speed. And then, you know, in the six and seven, you got Vicome and Maximum Security. So all those horses could be eliminating one another. And whoever gets to the front, as Jonathan said, most likely Maximum Security. Hopefully, you know, some of the other speed hooks up with them, because I'm far from loving speed. I'm always the kind of guy who's looking for the closer, and that's why I haven't picked a winner in the Derby for at least 10 years, because you see in the results, if you're not within the first flight, you're not winning this race. And I'm just hoping that maybe something will develop on the front end, that things will change, and we'll see a horse like an Orb or God forbid, Mind That Bird, or at least somebody who has a fighting chance to come off of the pace to make it close in the end.
Jonathan, have you, you say you're going to be looking for closers. You think the pace is going to get contested at some point. Have you sort of narrowed down to the ones that you're, I know you're still working through your picks, but do you sort of have an idea of like who are the ones in the mix that you're going to probably be picking from in the end?
More so, I've kind of eliminated a lot of horses, and it's probably, you know, the horses that we just touched on, you know, that are going to be going for the lead. War Will, Improbable, Maximum Security, Omaha Beach is going to be the favorite. You know, the horses I think that are going to, you know, be winging early or up there early or making early moves are the ones I'm shying away from. So I'm going to pick from, you know, probably the rest of them. And, you know, one of the two of the things I like to do very late is I'll go back and watch some replays, probably Thursday or Friday. I like watching replays, a couple of weeks after and you know, watch them again a few weeks after I saw them the first time, because you're a little bit more objective, I think. And, you take the excitement and the wagering factors out of the race, and sometimes you get a better picture when you do that. So I'm going to do that. And then, another thing I like to do is I'll make a little spreadsheet and see, you know, who consistently comes home, you know, the fastest last quarters and whatnot, and, you know, try and put all of that together with my observations and probably pick from there. But it's, you know, definitely going to be somebody in the second or third flight of horses, for sure.
Gary, Jonathan just touched on an interesting thing there, and I wonder if you would talk about it for a minute. He talked about sort of his process of handicapping and, you know, going back and looking at replays and looking who comes home fast and, you know, these different elements. What are some of the things that you are going to, you know, that you use as you go into handicapping a race like this?
Well, specifically for the Derby, I first look at the 20 horses that are in the race and what their running style is, to see if it's speed heavy, closer heavy, whatever. And in this particular year, it's pretty much even. There's not a ton of speed, but a nice, you know, 4 to 5 early speed, same amount. The ones who just want to be a little off the pace, you got your mid-pack horses and you got your closers. So the field isn't – I don't see the field being bunched up at any particular point as they go into the turn. The next thing I look at is kind of history of the race. You know, I use the Brisnet past performances, and there's like specific best – Brisnet speed figures that horses require in order to be successful on the first Saturday in May. So I look at that and basically just try to envision how the race will be run to the best of my ability. I also like to look at, as Jonathan pointed out, how does a horse come home? You know, I tend to look at the last prep races and how the horse finished up coming from the 1 mile to the last eighth. You know, was it fast or was it slow? And you just can't look at the final times. So there's just so much that goes into it. As soon as the gates open and your horse stumbles at the start, then all of a sudden you'll look like an idiot. So
we've all been there.
Right. So, but I, you know, I haven't cashed a whole lot of tickets over the last couple of years in the Derby because it's been chalk for the last 7 years. And, people blame the point system for making it truly, the best horses versus, horses who have been able to get there based on earnings in sprint races or other races. So I guess they've accomplished what they wanted as far as getting the best horses who can run the classic distance, but it certainly has taken away from those of us who like to find value, and we've been fed a bunch of chalk the last 7 years.
So you're obviously figuring if you can't beat them, join them and picking the chalk this year. But Jonathan, here's my question. The Derby used to be like a really, for me, like an important's too big a word, but I would put more money into the Derby than any other race or any other day all year long. That's not really the case for me anymore. It really does not take on any outsized importance in terms of my betting outcomes over the course of the year. What about you?
Well, you're going to get me into dangerous waters, and I'll tell you why. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I do bet more on Derby and Oaks Day than the rest of the year. There are about 4 or 5 days when I will really bet a much larger amount of money than I do during the course of the year, and that would be Oaks and Derby, the two Breeders' Cup days, Travers Day, Belmont Day, maybe Pacific Classic Day, and that's really it. And those days have narrowed down. It went from every weekend to maybe a dozen days to now half a dozen days. And the reason is twofold. One is I like betting into bigger pools with a lot of recreational money in there because there's enough sharks in the water during the week and on every just regular weekend day, and between the sharks in the water and the takeout, it gets very tough. I mean, make no mistake, I play to win. I play to beat the game. I don't play for fun. I don't play just to have a day at the races, and I play as a business. I want to win. At the end of the year, I want to be in the black, and I want to be in the black a substantial amount that counts. So rolling with the punches and adapting to the times, I've scaled back the days that I play, which in turn has scaled back how much I wager over the course of the year. But, in addition to that reason, the second reason is that the game is just tough. And sometimes I'm not as comfortable, with maiden 20 claimers on Wednesday at Saratoga as I am with a grade one stake where I know everybody's in there all out to win. And the playing field is a little bit more level. So between that and the pools, I gravitate to those days. Derby Day, there's ridiculous pools, ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, there's very few days where you could bet $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on a horse that's 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1 and not move the board. You can do that. You can do that at Churchill Downs. And as longtime horse players, I know that you guys have had times in your careers where a horse is 5, 6, 7 to 1 that you just absolutely love. You know what I mean? And you may make the biggest bet, be it 20, 50, 100, 1,000, whatever it is, on that horse. On Derby Day, my philosophy is to save that money all year and take those shots on those big days where you're not going to move the board, you're not going to telegraph it. And when you're right, you only need, if you do that 5, 6 times a year, you only got to be right once or twice. So the odds, the percentage shifts back into your favor.
Gary, what's your take on that?
No, I agree with Jonathan 100%, even though, like you said, as a horse player, as a regular horse player, we always looked at Derby Day, Breeders' Cup Day, because it was always the best horses, and we just felt compelled to extend our budget because of the focus on that day. But Jonathan nailed it for the reason why we should, because of the pulls. You're never going to get the odds that you're getting on any of the horses you like in the Derby either prior to the Derby or after the Derby. The polls are so large, and even though none of us have said that we'd probably be betting the Superfecta, but the strange part about betting the Derby is that even though the logical horses finished in the trifecta last year with the favorite winning and Justify, I mean, the trifecta, the 50 cent, or let's call it a dollar trifecta, only paid $140. You know, you get that every day of the week. But the Superfecta with a price horse, that dollar super paid $19,000. So, as John said, you're not going to get those kind of payoffs on even a Saturday at Belmont or whatever. And I was watching the races opening night from Churchill. I liked the horse, and he was 7-2 in the post parade. So I wound up betting him, and they go in the gate. He's 5-2. By the time they finished the race, he was 6-5. And it's technology these days we're susceptible to that because there's programs out there where the whales are just dumping the money based on a horse's odds. And as Jonathan said, you might not see that, come Saturday, especially, I mean, they post the odds like an hour before the race, and very rarely do you see any of the 20 odds move more than a point or two. So, sadly, the philosophy or the mindset of the horse player is unload on the big days. But, in reality, it's just another horse race, but because of the size of the pools, your return on investment will be 5-10-fold on a normal day.
Well, you hope it'll be 5-10-fold. Could be 0 too.
Well, I can guarantee
it's always
you,
that.
Yeah, even if you're betting the exacta, okay, it's as simple as the exacta. Exacta last year paid $69. You're not going to get a $69, $2 exact to pay off on a 5-2 and a 9-1 because you're not going to have a 20 horse field to pull in all those. So, for what it's worth, I hate to admit it, but I tend to make bets on the Derby that I typically wouldn't do on a normal day.
Fair enough. So, Gary, let me ask you this. Best Derby score, worst Derby beat?
Probably best Derby score was when I gave out the trifecta in 2013 when Golden Soul ran second to Orb. Even though I didn't pick them in that exact order, I picked those top three. So that was probably the best. Worst beat, never had a bad beat in the Derby. I guess that's the one thing I can hang my hat on. I can't recall ever, missing by that much type of Derby. So probably a bad beat would be years ago betting a favorite who folded up on the backstretch. So.
There are those every year. What about you, Jonathan?
Well, the worst beat. I'll talk about the worst beat first. This way, we go to a positive note. Would probably had to have been Giacomo. I used Giacomo in a bunch of horizontal wages, and was not alive in any of them going into the Derby. Just managed to get myself beat all over the place. So now I'm losing and I'm frustrated and I'm, I don't know how many years ago that was, 10 or whatever many years ago was. So I probably wasn't as savvy then as I might be today. So in my frustrated state, instead of betting to win, I felt like I'm supposed to be alive for a lot of money here, and I'm not. So his ridiculous win odds weren't enough to me. I decided to bet supers. And let me just get my thoughts. Okay, closing argument beats a Fleet Alex and beats me out of a $2 superfecta. So by a note, I have no closing argument anywhere. Okay. And you know, to add insult to, and so I lost everything. I didn't cash a ticket. Okay. I had nothing to win, lost the superfecta by a nose. And I was with my dad and some family at Calder Racetrack in Miami when Calder was still open. And we were sitting up in a restaurant. At the next table was Phil Cohn, who was one of the owners of Closing Argument, and Kevin McGooey, one of the bloodstock agents, and Brian Morgan, may rest in peace. And they were all involved in picking this horse out at the sale. So the fact that he ran, hit the board in the Derby, they were ecstatic. They were screaming, high-fiving, yelling, jumping all over. And they were, like, right next to me. And I just had, like, the worst beat that you could possibly imagine. And I knew in my heart, I'm like, there's no way this horse is supposed to beat a Fleet Alex. It just, it can't happen. How do I lose it? You know, so that had to be, I probably invested about $3,000 or $4,000 in tickets with Giacomo and did not cash a one of them.
Oh, that is rough.
I mean, I literally walked to the car numb. I mean, I was like, it was a surreal experience. Couldn't believe it. You know, how bad did I want that $3,000-$4,000 back just to bet him to win? You know what I mean? And be a genius. But
well,
that's the
classic, you know, the classic horse player handicapped the race correctly, somehow walked away with no money story.
Right. And you know the worst part? You try and explain that to someone who doesn't bet the horses and you can't. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I went home and like, I was like, what's the matter? I'm like, just nothing. Everything's great. Don't even worry, you know what I mean? What do you say? You know? I mean, you can't, you know? And but, you know, moving to two good scores, also going back a ways, the year that Grindstone won was a six-figure day to me. I loved Grindstone. It was a tremendous photo. I knew I won it. It was a six-figure day. But what made it really special is the day before, my brother and I loved Pike Place Dancer, who won the Oaks at a nice price for Hollendorfer with Nakatani, and that was real close to a six-figure day for me. So it was back-to-back. It was an unbelievable weekend. My brother did the same thing, and, you know, it was a really, really, you know, happy, great Derby. The other one that comes to mind was Animal Kingdom. That was a huge day for me, but I still say in one of the rare instances that triple came back, I want to say $3,800. And I remember I had it a bunch of times, but I remember standing there waiting for that payoff to go off. And my friend says, what do you think this triple's coming back? I said, gotta be 10,000. He's like, you think? I'm like, no question. Gotta be 10,000. Came back 3,800. I almost felt like I lost. I mean, I didn't want to be greedy. I can't complain, but I still say something was wrong with that triple. I don't know what it was. It wasn't me, but somebody must've had it a lot of times, I have a feeling. So, I don't know, but those were two of the better ones for me.
Well, those are good stories there. For me, I don't have any spectacular Derby loss other than for like 5 years in a row, I talked myself into a horse coming out of the Louisiana Derby, which is just a fool's errand. And I did it year after year before I finally said never again. So I can't be on any Louisiana horse now. That's a new rule for me. My best score actually was a fun story. I went to the Derby, I guess it was 01 with my – 01 or 02, anyway, my then girlfriend, now wife, and first time I'd been to the Derby, and we were sitting way down at the, in the grandstand, way down at the, like, towards the quarter pole, and I had a war emblem and proud citizen in my exacta who went 1-2, and I think that exacta came back $1,300 for $2, something like that. But where we were sitting, you couldn't see where the payoff was, so... Yeah, where we were sitting, everybody was silent because nobody had it except me, and I'm jumping up and down. And then I said, well, I got to go, you know, cash. And I had no idea what the payoff had been. So I go to the teller, and I still don't know what the payoff was. And She says to me, "Oh, did you hit a big one?" I said, "Well, I think I might have." And I hand her the ticket, and she runs it through, and it beeps because it's an IRS ticket. And her eyes got real wide, and she goes, "Oh, you did hit a big one." So that was my good Derby betting moment, or my favorite Derby betting moment. So not as good as Jonathan's, however. But
I do have a bad beat, but it involved the Belmont. And so maybe if we do one for the Belmont, I'll save it for that.
Maybe we'll save that thought and reconvene if everybody's up for it for subsequent. All right, I think we've probably about hit it. Jonathan, you have any other thoughts you want to share on the Derby?
No, just want to wish everybody good luck and enjoy it. You know, it's always a fun day, always just value to be had, and just, you know, go after whatever you see that you like.
Gary?
Just the fact that, you know, it's always the weather throws a wrench into, you know, days and months of following these horses to Saturday. And over the years, I've become very in tune to the physical part of the horse and just seeing them on the track. So it's huge to me to actually see them during the walkover, how they're acting and how they're presenting themselves, because I've saved a lot of money since I've been in tune with the physicality of the horse and how they're showing their body language leading up to the race. And if you want to throw in a bad beat, Animal Kingdom was that horse that I was in a party, and I'd already made my bets, and I'm like looking over. I'm like, who is that horse? They were just standing in the paddock, still had blanket on or whatever. Never found out who the horse was. So Animal Kingdom wins, you know, pays $40-some. I didn't have him. Still had no idea who the horse was. I thought it looked fantastic. And the next day in the paper, there's a picture of Animal Kingdom walking Shed Row with the same blanket that I saw at the party. So it's like, if I would only have known. So lessons learned, forget about the party, just concentrate on the horse.
That's it. There's no time for partying. This is the Kentucky Derby. Exactly. Well, Jonathan Stetton, thanks a lot for joining us here on this Off to the Races podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. Gary, thank you as always.
Thanks, Frank. And Jonathan, it was great chewing the fat with you and finding out about your philosophies. Hope to do it again.
My pleasure, guys. Look forward to it.
All right, everybody, thanks so much for joining us here. That was Jonathan Stetton of PassTheWire.com, Gary Quill, TheRacingBiz.com. Check out their picks and analysis on those respective sites. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Off to the Races, doing it Derby podcast style. Good luck in the Derby.